Success to me is, first off, having financial freedom and, you know, flexibility with time. So financial freedom, I want to be able to do what I want to do whenever and not have to worry about the funds. And time flexibility, I want to be able to go on, you know, vacations with my family or go to sporting events or whatnot and still have, you know, my business running in the background and not feel like I'm extremely overwhelmed. And then, you know, the third thing is just spending a significant amount of time with my family. We have two girls, a 9 and a 5-year-old daughter. You know, we just want to make sure that we're raising them right and really enjoying the time while they're young.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mike Roeder is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He transitioned from single-family investments to multifamily in 2015. Thus far, they've taken down 1,600 units and over $150 million of assets. He's also the co-founder of Granite Towers Equity Group. They're a real estate private equity firm. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Sam. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, where I started was actually in the single family space. I house hacked my first rental property. We rented out 3 out of the 4 bedrooms. And my now wife was my girlfriend back then. We lived in the 4th bedroom. Really enjoyed the cash flow on that deal. So we picked up a few more single family rentals. And then along the way, I had a really good friend that was investing in apartments. He was buying anywhere from duplexes up to 24 units. Mm. And so we, you know, kind of came together and said, hey, let's buy a couple of deals together and let's see how it goes. So we bought a 20 unit together, bought an 8-unit together, and decided that we loved apartments. We wanted to scale. So we started Granite Towers Equity Group about 5 years ago. And it was kind of off to the races with syndication, doing bigger projects, raising capital from passive investors.
Right. A common sticking point, if you will, for investors is finding the right partners. I mean, this is a team sport. So it sounds like you guys had a very natural progression for that. Can you walk us through that?
We did. You know, I feel very fortunate because I didn't have to try hard to find the right partner. We knew each other ever since middle school. You know, we both had certain strengths that really forged together very, very well. So I feel like we got lucky, but for those of those people out there that are looking for partners, I would say just do your due diligence, really get to know the person. Because obviously when you jump into a deal together, you know, you're probably going to be pretty much married to that person for the next 4 or 5, maybe 10 years. And so you got to make sure that you jive well, you have strengths that coordinate with one another and that, you know, you're going to be able to enjoy working with that person for the next 3 to 5, 7, 10 years.
That's so true. Yeah. Because this isn't a one deal business. You're building a team. Have you guys added anybody else to the partnership since then?
We have. So we have a couple of employees. We have a full-time accountant / CFO that works for us. And we also have a full-time assistant. We have an intern working for us now. And then we are bringing on a full-time asset manager here as of the 3rd of January. So building out the team as we go.
Talk to us about why you are bringing on a full-time asset manager.
When you start out in the multifamily space, you know, you can get up to 5, maybe 10 properties where you're asset managing those deals yourself. But once you kind of get past that 7 to 10 deal range, and this is my opinion, you start to get a little bit stretched thin. You know, you have your weekly calls on all of the deals. You need to make sure that all your CapEx projects are going as planned. You need to be visiting the properties. You need to stay up on the financials. So you just need to add team members as you kind of approach that 7 to 10 deal range. So that's what we've done. You know, we've gotten to a certain point and now we feel like that person is really needed in our business. So we're adding them.
Tell me, you know, when you say staying up on the financials, is that something your CFO does or is that something your asset manager does?
Our CFO makes sure that everything's coded correctly in the books, that the property management company is doing everything correctly. However, we do look over the monthly financials as well and just scan over them, make sure that everything's going as planned, making sure that we're hitting our pro forma numbers. So that's something that the asset manager is going to take over, you know, once they come on board.
Has your CFO or your soon-to-be asset manager position, have you guys found things from the property management side that looked out of whack? If so, what did you do to correct those?
I would say the biggest item that we find on a monthly basis is, you know, certain CapEx projects are, you know, maybe put under the expense category. It's affecting your NOI, which is affecting your value. So you want to make sure that all of your CapEx projects are quoted below the line, below the NOI. So that way it's not affecting your value. You know, that's a big thing. We've also found certain expenses that should have been allocated to a different property or a different team, you know, and they allocated it to our property. And so we were able to back those out. So there's always little nuances that you can find in the financials. So you really need to make sure to pay close attention to those.
Yeah, I would say so. How does that work? I mean, are you guys, when they come to you for capital expenditures, I mean, is there a dollar amount over which they have to get things approved? How does that work in that process?
Yeah, typically we have a $500 to $1,000 maximum, and then they'll have to come to us for approval. And that's written right into the property management agreement. So when you're signing up with a third-party manager, make sure you understand that property management agreement, you know, front to back, maybe even have your legal team look over it before you sign that, because it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And on property management topic, do you guys have the same property manager across all of your assets, or are you working with multiple teams?
Yeah, we're working with multiple teams. So we're in a few different markets. We invest in Nashville, Dallas, Fort Worth, and then we have some assets up in the Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, close to where I live. And so we have several different teams. Typically, we like to go into a market and really find a company that does really, really well in that market and submarket that has quite a few assets, has a team built out and the right amount of properties under their belt to properly manage our deals. So we do have several different teams.
One of the two things I think that we all need in this business is deals and money, right? Without one or the other, you're not really in business. So you've raised quite a bit of capital for these opportunities. Talk to us about the capital raising journey and maybe some of the struggles you've had with it, as well as some of the things that you have found that made you successful.
Yeah, you bet. So capital raising, you know, we started out small. I mean, our first deal that we syndicated was a 45 unit project. We raised about $575,000, went very quick. You know, we had been letting people know, hey, this is what we're doing. We joined some investor groups down in Dallas, Fort Worth. So we had been networking like crazy, you know, to build out our database. So that one went really quick. You know, then we went up to a $2 million raise. You know, now we've been doing deals where we raise, you know, 8 to 16 million on a single deal. So it's been a natural progression over, you know, a 4-year period or so. And I would say, you know, a couple of tips: networking at real estate events, that's been huge for us. Also, you know, reaching out and letting people know what you do, you know, your friends, your family, your colleagues, bring up that conversation, talk to them a little bit about what you do. You're not necessarily asking for money, but you're just telling them, hey, this is what we're doing. This is what the returns look like. This is what our typical project looks like. A couple other really good avenues, you know, CPA firms. Our CPA refers quite a bit of business over to us. So that's a great avenue. You know, your legal team, they might have a lot of good connections. Your bankers, your lenders, there's all these different connections that you have when you're doing a multifamily project. And each one of those connections might have additional connections that they can refer over to you.
What has been some of the struggles you've had around capital raising, and then how have you overcome them?
Truthfully, we haven't had a lot of struggles with capital raising. I think we went at the right pace where we didn't, you know, go for something too big right out of the gates. We did about a year ago, we structured one deal as a 10-year hold. We typically do a 5-year hold. So our investors are very used to that. We structured it as a 10-year hold, and we didn't get a lot of interest. So we actually switched it over to a 5-year hold, worked really well that way too. So I would say that was our biggest struggle, is just, you know, all of a sudden realizing, hey, people aren't really interested in this long-term hold, you know, and I'm sure some people do it that way. And that's great. I like the longer-term holds, but our investors were really used to that shorter 3 to 5 year hold period.
It really is interesting how you have to prep, because I just finished a call with somebody about this not 20 minutes ago. But how you have to prep your investors in the predictability and what it is that you put out and when you put it out, I think is as important as, you know, anything else that goes into the deal. And so for you, putting out five-year deals, and all of a sudden it's a 10-year deal, you're going, oh, wait, like what? This is different. I've not looked at a 10-year deal before. That seems like a long time. Has there been any bad advice that you've received in the scaling process that you said, I don't know about that, or maybe advice you took and then found out that it was bad?
We picked up one deal that was very dependent on a certain industry. It was in an oil market. Mm. And, you know, we had got some advice that, you know, hey, oil's on the way up. You know, we looked at the stats behind it, what was going on, where we were in the cycle. And so we picked up that deal, and that's really been our only deal that's been struggling over the last couple of years since COVID hit. So I would just say that advice of getting into a specific market when it's really dependent on one industry, I would stay away from that going forward.
And it doesn't matter, I think, what it is. I mean, I've heard that for military towns, you know, where the military base can just pick up and leave and suddenly you got tumbleweeds going, okay. And I too participated in some of that oil business, not on investments for me, but as a passive investor, and have seen some of the struggles that have gone along with being so heavily dependent upon one particular sector. And what's one of the biggest challenges you feel like you face in your business today?
I feel like we are able to locate deals. That was always our problem is, hey, you know, we want to find the right amount of deals to buy per year. How can we do that? How can we keep the deal flow up? And I feel like over the last 12 months, we've finally jumped over that hurdle where we have strong enough relationships with these brokers. We know the markets really well. So when we're ready to buy another deal, we can typically find it pretty quick. Other issues, I would say just finding enough time in the day to get to everything that you want to get to. When you're building a business, you know, typically if your business is doing pretty well, you're going to run into that situation. And it's like, no matter how many people you add, you know, you still feel behind at the end of the day. That's probably the biggest issue.
Yeah. How do you plan on overcoming that?
I would say just continuing to add people onto our team, leverage other people's time, and then try to become more efficient. So adding, you know, additional systems. Like I was looking into Monday.com, which is a platform where you can, you know, sort tasks out to your team members and whatnot and stay a little bit more organized. So I would say, you know, continuing to use technology to really become more and more efficient as well.
Right. And the problem I think a lot of us face is that there's such a learning curve to those technologies that sometimes on the front end, the difficulty of getting your systems and your processes into the tech takes more time than the absolutely pressing, urgent item you got to get done now. And so it's like,
that's right.
Which at some point you got to give, but it's always that balancing act.
It's such a tough thing to do. You know, it kind of falls back on the E-Myth by Michael Gerber. It's like, you know, you want to work on your business, not in your business. But like you said, you have so many different tasks that are, they need to get done.
Right.
And so they take your, you know, they are prioritized and, you know, you do those and then, you know, you don't have much time left over to systematize stuff. So that can be tough.
It is tough. It is tough. And when we fall into that entrepreneurial, you know, trap of mistaking activity for progress, it's like, okay, we're frenetic activity, but did we make any progress? I'm not quite sure. So, man, that's a pain point that we all certainly struggle with. I know I struggle with at the end of the day. Is there anything else outside of, you know, more processes and more people that you're doing personally to make sure that you're maximizing your time during the day?
Yeah, I would say time blocking. We've been trying to do that more. So like we were just talking about implementing systems. You know, it's always on the back burner. Hey, I want to do this today. Then you get caught up in other things. But if you time block, you know, an hour or two and say, hey, this is what I'm doing at this time, you know, nothing else is going to take priority over that. That helps, you know, to make sure that you get those tasks or those items done.
Yeah, you said it, man. That's a huge thing. I've been doing that myself as well. Like when it comes time to a particular task, even turning my phone off. What's one piece of advice or maybe the best advice you feel like you've ever received from a mentor in the industry?
Copying the process of someone that's already done what you want to do and they've been extremely successful at it. So, you know, that's what Dan and I did when we decided, hey, we're going to deal with other people's money and we're going to syndicate deals. You know, we found a mentor, did exactly what we wanted to do, had thousands of units and just replicated what they did. So it's, you know, I would say that's the best advice I ever got. And, you know, if I went to follow that advice, I'd probably be at, you know, maybe 30 or 40% of where I'm at today.
What does success mean to you? And then how would you define it?
Yeah, success to me is first off having financial freedom and, you know, flexibility with time. So financial freedom, I want to be able to do what I want to do whenever and not have to worry about the funds. And time flexibility, I want to be able to go on, you know, vacations with my family or go to sporting events or whatnot and still have, you know, my business running in the background and not feel like I'm extremely overwhelmed. And then, you know, the third thing is just spending a significant amount of time with my family. We have two girls, a 9 and a 5-year-old daughter. You know, we just want to make sure that we're raising them right and really enjoying the time while they're young.
Mike, let's jump here into the final four questions. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
Tool or resource? I mean, truthfully, I'll give you two. I mean, Gmail, obviously, fantastic tool. You know, the calendar, Google Drive, everything that, you know, Google has implemented, Google Forms. We take advantage of that. And so those tools are just absolutely phenomenal in today's environment.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
One mistake, so I already talked a little bit about the markets. You know, I would say another thing is just make sure that you're coming in well capitalized on these deals. So make sure that you have a significant amount of renovation dollars. If you think it's going to be $1 million that you're going to have to stick into the project, maybe, you know, budget for 1.2 million because there's always items that pop up, especially on older deals. If you're buying a 60s or 70s year built deal. So that would be a recommendation of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always give the money back if you raised it in equity.
That's right.
But it's really hard going back to the well. So
that's right. A capital call. You know, we've never had to do one, but I can't imagine that it's a fun situation to have to go back out to your investors and say, hey, we need more money.
We need more money. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah. So we donate a portion of all of our profits at Granite Towers Equity Group, and we split it in between a couple of organizations. Operation Underground Railroad, you know, a company that's teamed up a little bit with Tony Robbins, and they help end or reduce sex slavery, you know, amongst children. So very, very dear to our heart. And then Every Meal, which is a company that fills food gaps. So when kids go home from school and they don't have food on the evenings or the weekends, it helps bring food to those children at the end of the day of school or, you know, on a Friday, fills their backpack full of food if they need it. That way they're not, you know, hungry on the weekend. So we love doing that.
That's absolutely fantastic. Mike, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So there's a couple different ways. You know, I would say first off, if you visit our website, which is granitetowersequitygroup.com, we have a contact us page on that website. And then also there's an ebook about passive investing. You can download that as well. Otherwise, you can certainly email me. My email address is mike@granitetowersequitygroup.com.
Mike, thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Really appreciate you having me on, Sam. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.